Chapter 6. Work, work, work. Oh, the amount that I see to be done for all, before Christian Science is established on the rock, against which the billows beat in vain. Mary Baker Eddy, 1901. No doubt the workers in Mrs. Eddy's home, who were aware of Mr. Noreen's healing, were inspired in their own healing work. Mrs. Eddy strengthened their resolve in this watch of September 4th, preserved by Lewis Strang. Healing alone built this cause, and will not be lost if hearts open to his truth and love sustain the hands of those appointed to voice God in this age. Form in service means nothing. Only healing can build his temple in the wilderness. How mother longs, prays, to hear of more healing in the service of divine love. More and better healing is accomplished when more time and thought is devoted to sustaining, quote, the hands of those appointed to voice God in this age, end quote. While a few devoted students were aware of Mrs. Eddy's healing works that never ceased and were dedicated to improving their own work in this area, a great many scientists were interested in her appearance at the fair and in her place of residence. Just so, thousands had visited Pleasant View, but very few knew that it was a well-managed farm. A short article from the Concord Monitor during the 1901 harvest season gives us an inkling of the diversification of Mrs. Eddy's interests. Harvesting on the Reverend Mary Baker Eddy Place. Few of the many visitors to Concord who enjoy so much the charming drive out to Pleasant View with its macadamized road, well-kept lawns, flowers, and shrubbery, imagine that the Reverend Mary Baker Eddy has one of the best-equipped model farms in New England. This is under the careful management of Mr. August Mann, and it would well pay anyone interested in agriculture to look over Pleasant View's farm machinery and pattern after its methods. One of the latest acquisitions is an Adrian's rear discharge reaper and binder working in the 20-acre field of rye, which handles the 6-foot grain with perfect ease, though badly lodged in places. It is a great favorite with the farmer. The large grass crop at Pleasant View is handled by a 6-foot Adrian's Buckeye mower and New Yorker rakes. And while the territory mowed over is not so large, the crops are very heavy. They have a full equipment of plowing and pulverizing machinery, including New Yorker disc and loam smoothing harrows. One should not forget the dairy at Pleasant View. It is fully supplied with cream separators, churns, and butter workers of the latest improved patterns. In fact, every department of the estate of the modest owner is looked after with great care. Mrs. Eddy supervised all of the work that was done at Pleasant View and made all of the decisions, but most of her work was done in her own study, and much of it while seated in her favorite armchair. Calvin Hill was often in Mrs. Eddy's study after his first visit in the spring of 1899. On one visit, he noted how badly worn was her armchair and determined to surprise her with a new one. After getting exact measurements and having a reproduction made, he exchanged the new chair for the old one while Mrs. Eddy was out on her drive one day. With his gift, he left a letter of appreciation and gratitude, stating that his, quote, only desire is that it may give you the comfort that it does me the joy in giving it, end quote. Mrs. Eddy was delighted with his considerate action, and in her letter of thanks, enclosed a, quote, card complimentary, end quote, to the next normal class to be held in June 1902. In addition, in 1901, she had Mr. Hill made a first member of her church. Another student, who was often in Mrs. Eddy's private rooms, was John Salcho. Many a time, John was called upon for some repair job or another, and he went quietly about his work. Quite often, Mrs. Eddy talked to him freely, but on occasion he worked for hours in her presence, and never a word was spoken. John wrote in his reminiscences, "She frequently told me that I never disturbed her, that when I came in, she could feel my presence without knowing that I was near, and that sometimes, when she had been suffering, my thought helped to lift her out of it. I can never begin to tell the joy with which such words filled me." John was an honest seeker for truth, quote, "an Israelite indeed, in whom was no guile," end quote. The earnest, conscientious thought and service of her faithful John was a refreshing oasis in a desert of ambitious worldliness. The ambitious worldliness, which seemed ubiquitous at times, was trying indeed, but the mindless malice her pioneering work had uncovered was deadly. She had published in her historical sketch in 1886, "If any honest Christian Scientist can be deceived into thinking that it is chance, not direction, by malicious minds which are at work, that ignorance instead of sin is what he has to meet at all times, this error prevents him from understanding enough of the question to ensure his own defense and leaves him in the power of animal magnetism. Ceaseless toil, self-renunciation, and love have cleared the pathway for Christian Science. I have learned all that I have written through experience and persecution. When you denounce sin, you begin to remove it, for its denunciation must precede its destruction. God is good. Hence, goodness is the life of all men. Its opposite, named evil, is a conspiracy against man's life and goodness. All the world witnessed the conspiracy named evil, not chance, but direction by malicious minds at work. On the 6th of September, crowds had come to a public reception at the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York, to shake hands with President McKinley. Leon Colgus, alias Fred Neiman, who appeared to have an injured right hand, stood in the long line, and as he shook the president's hand with his left hand, he shot him with a .32 caliber revolver concealed in the handkerchief of his injured right hand. All the world was stunned by this malevolence. This act of violence may have prompted Mrs. Eddy's next action, or perhaps it just hastened it. She had executed a trust deed on February 12, 1898, conveying Pleasant View and all the personal property therein to Calvin A. Fry. On September 5, 1901, Calvin had transferred Pleasant View back to Mrs. Eddy. It was the next day that President McKinley was shot, and the following Friday, September 13th, Irving C. Tomlinson, his sister Mary Tomlinson, Myron Pratt, and Alvin B. Cross came to Pleasant View to sign their names following this paragraph on a legal document. Signed, sealed, and declared by the above-named Mary Baker G. Eddy as and for her last will and testament, in the presence of us, who, at her request, in her presence, and in the presence of each other, have subscribed our names as witnesses hereto. The next day, September 14th, President McKinley died. Although the initial reports had been hopeful of his recovery, the Christian churches in the land held memorial services on September 19th. At the Mother Church in Boston, Mrs. Eddy's, quote, tribute to President McKinley, end quote, miscellany, page 291, was read, as was her letter written to Mrs. McKinley, miscellany, page 290, on the day her husband passed away. The prestigious Harper's Weekly stated, all the preachers preached on President McKinley. All the editors wrote about him. Thousands said about the same things. Mrs. Eddy issued two utterances. Both of these discourses are seemly and kind, but they are materially different from the writings of anyone else. Reciting the praises of the dead president, Mrs. Eddy says, quote, may his history waken a tone of truth that shall reverberate, renew euphony, emphasize humane power, and bear its banner into the vast forever. End quote. No one else said anything like that. Mrs. Eddy's style is a personal asset. Her sentences usually have the considerable literary merit of being unexpected. Her letter to Mrs. McKinley was short, sympathetic, religious, and very much to the point. Her position in the country as the head and chief spokesman of an important religious body is very curious and highly interesting. A few days later, the Boston Journal asked Mrs. Eddy the question, quote, why did Christians of every sect in the United States fail in their prayers to save the life of our late lamented president? End quote. Her answer, miscellany, page 292, was published with the dateline, Concord, New Hampshire, September 25th, under the caption, quote, Mrs. Eddy Explains, end quote. Perhaps the most significant sentence in her explanation was, quote, had prayer so fervently offered possessed no opposing element, and his recovery been regarded wholly contingent on the power of God, the power of divine love to overrule the purposes of hate, and the law of spirit to control matter, the result would have been scientific, and the patient would have recovered. End quote. Early in October, Mrs. Eddy's thought turned to Benny in Waterbury, Vermont, and she wrote him a tender letter. He responded on October 22nd, beginning his letter, my most blessed mother, your letter came in due time, and it was so sweet and precious, just like you. Many issues of the Sentinel contain a notice of an obstetric class to be taught by Dr. Baker, which was to convene October 21st, and an unusual notice appeared in the Sentinel of October 31st. It stated simply, Reading Room in Concord, New Hampshire. First Church of Christ Scientist in Concord, New Hampshire has closed its reading room at Christian Science Hall. This room will hereafter be used for private purposes. The Christian Science literature, however, will be for sale there as formerly. This action upon the part of the church is taken with the approval of Mrs. Eddy. Was there too much socializing and too little studying in the reading room nearest Mrs. Eddy's home? Or was this action related to the following notice, which appeared 3 weeks later? Take notice. All gifts by mail, express, or that are handed to the porter at my door without cards, and have not come from persons with whom I am acquainted, will be returned to the office whence they came, or rejected at my door. Recent attempts of third parties to scandalize me through the friendly means aforesaid have occasioned this notice. Mary Baker G. Eddy. Numbering the Lines. 1902 Revision of Science and Health, 226th edition. Mrs. Eddy's first concern was the protection of her work, and the work at hand right now was the major revision of Science and Health. By mid-November, her revising was essentially completed, and she was ready for the assistance of the two students she had chosen to help with this project, Edward A. Kimball and William P. McKenzie. Mr. Kimball had returned to his home in Chicago in July, in which city he delivered an address at the dedication of Third Church on July 14th. In September, he resumed lecturing, with an extremely heavy schedule in October and early November. McKenzie lectured in Barre, Vermont, on November 14th, but very soon thereafter, the two men were back in Massachusetts, working on Science and Health. Mrs. Eddy sent the changes she wanted them to work on, and Mr. Kimball wrote her their working procedure on the 22nd of November. First, I take the copy and study it with a view of detecting any necessary changes. Then, Mr. McKenzie takes it and goes over the punctuation and corrects the quotations. After that, we go over it together and discuss all changes of every kind, and possibly make more, and finally each one goes over the complete copy by himself. A completed passage was sent to Mrs. Eddy for her scientific scrutiny and final decision. More than one passage came back for further work. But all in all, the task of these two able writers progressed rapidly. Mr. Kimball went over to Cambridge every day, where they worked together in Mackenzie's study, and the manuscript was ready for the printer by the time William Orcutt returned from Europe. Mr. Orcutt was a little disappointed to find that his conferences were not to be with Mrs. Eddy, but with one of her lieutenants he had not met before, William P. McKenzie. As it turned out, Orcutt and McKenzie were very compatible, and their work together on the 1902 revision of Science and Health proved to be the beginning of a lifelong friendship. Mr. Orcutt later wrote of this period, "As he and I went over the manuscript together, it became evident that hours of concentrated thought had gone into its revision. Mr. Mackenzie pointed out to me that not less than half the pages contained corrections, a word here, a rearranged sentence there, a deletion or an elaboration, never a change of thought, but finally expressing the author's mature judgment in making the meaning clearer." The first problem to be decided by Orcutt and Mackenzie was the numbering of the lines. Mackenzie first thought every line should be numbered, and Orcutt thought every fifth line. Then both agreed on every third line. Orcutt wrote, "Mr. Mackenzie suggested taking the three experimental pages to Mrs. Eddy. I told him that she always preferred a definite suggestion rather than alternative choices. Quote, put the proofs in her pocket, I said, but show her the one you and I prefer, holding the other proofs in reserve. I don't think she will ask for them." End quote. And that is exactly what happened. Mrs. Eddy studied the proof carefully, approved it, and went on to other details. Her emendations and additions were not all that Mrs. Eddy sent to Mr. Kimball and Mr. Mackenzie. She also sent them a large number of testimonials of healings affected solely by reading Science and Health, which had been published in the Journal or the Sentinel. From this collection, the two men were to make selections and plan the arrangement for the final chapter Mrs. Eddy had outlined to them, and entitled Fruitage. The first presentation of Fruitage in 1902 was 101 pages, as was the last in 1910. It began on page 600 and ended the book on page 700, making it the longest chapter. The second longest chapter was Chapter 12, Christian Science Practice, which had been increased from 79 to 81 pages. Even though half the pages had changes and there were a good many additions, about half the chapters remained the same length. The other half were increased by one or two pages, with the exception of Chapter 7, Physiology, which was decreased by three pages. Perhaps the most significant change, second to the numbering of the lines, was the rearrangement of the order of the first 11 chapters in this upcoming edition, which would be the 226th edition, or 226,000 copies. The following shows this rearrangement. 1901 edition, Chapter 1, Science, Theology, and Medicine. In the 226th edition, 1902, Prayer. 1901 edition, Chapter 2, Physiology. In the 226th edition, 1902, Atonement and Eucharist. In the 1901 edition, Chapter 3, Footsteps of Truth. In the 226th edition, 1902, Marriage. In the 1901 edition, Chapter 4, is Creation. In the 226th edition, 1902, Christian Science and Spiritualism. 1901 edition, Chapter 5, Science of Being. 226th edition, 1902, Animal Magnetism. 1901 edition, Chapter 6, Christian Science and Spiritualism. In the 226th edition, 1902, Science, Theology, Medicine. 1901 edition, Chapter 7, Marriage. In the 226th edition, 1902, Physiology. 1901 edition, Chapter 8, Animal Magnetism. 226th edition, 1902, Footsteps of Truth. 1901 edition, Chapter 9, Some Objections Answered. The 226th edition, 1902, Creation. In 1901 edition, Chapter 10, Prayer. In the 226th edition, 1902, Science of Being. And in 1901, Chapter 11, Atonement and Eucharist. In the 226th edition, 1902, Some Objections Answered. It would appear that Thomas W. Hatton was a third student helping with this revision of Science and Health. Hatton had been in Mrs. Eddy's last primary class in March of 1889 and had been in the publishing office since his move to Boston in 1892. Over the years, he became very dear to the leader, who wrote him these words of encouragement on April 20th, 1897. My precious child, do not be troubled like Martha of old over anything. Do not be disheartened over failure when at heart you are as faithful as Abraham. We are all to be tried and proved as by fire. Now, darling, there is but one mind. No other mind exists, and therefore an evil so-called mind cannot, does not affect you or your business. Keep the first commandment sacredly, and know there is but one mind. Keep the Ten Commandments. Do not let your affections rest for a moment in forbidden directions. But, dear one, have but one God, one affection, one peace. The senses that lie are nonsense. There is no sensation in wrong directions. Thomas Hatton became one of the trustees of the Publishing Society in September of 1898, when Edward P. Bates resigned. In November of 1901, Mrs. Eddy called Mr. Hatton to Pleasant View, where he served until the 226th edition was published in January of 1902. It was in the January 30th Sentinel of 1902 that the first announcement appeared, in only four lines, as follows. New edition of Science and Health. Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, printed from new plates, with lines numbered, and with important revisions by the author, is now ready for distribution. The February 6th Sentinel and March Journal contained Judge Hanna's editorial about the new edition of Science and Health. Each week, a notice appeared for the new edition, quote, with lines numbered, end quote, and it was announced that the next quarterly would contain double references from Science and Health to accommodate both those who had the old edition and those who had the 226th or later editions. Some students numbered the lines of their old textbook with pencil, but all serious students acquired the new edition in time.